And then we'll discuss them. This is the first one. If I and my spouse are both wanting out of the marriage, we separate. Then if one of the parties gets in another relationship, then I can remarry because the other party messed up, and I put that in air quotes, messed up first. How do we answer that? And is it clear enough? Does everybody understand what I've intended by saying that that way? Okay. Okay. So let's talk about the technicality of what I said here. If I and my spouse, so you have two people, they just want out of the marriage. They've fallen out of love, as people say today, right? Or drifted apart. So they don't get along anymore. They separate. And then one of the parties decides to go get in another relationship. Now, they understood going into this thing when they separated that they only had two options. They could be reconciled or they could remain apart, right? We know that from Scripture. So if they aren't reconciled and they don't stay together, what happens when one of those parties goes out and gets in another relationship and legally marries someone else or just starts dating somebody else? That's adultery. Okay, so does that then free up the other person? Because technically in God's eyes, he sees them as married still, right? Okay, so the one of them has now committed adultery on the other one. They were separated, and they had two options. One was to be reconciled. One is to stay apart. And if they stay apart, they have to remain celibate, and so they're apart from each other. So why does it not allow them, or does it allow them to the other party then? Are they free because the other one committed adultery? They didn't get divorced.
Okay. They weren't together as a married couple when either he or she committed fornication, adultery, whatever you want to call it. They weren't living together as man and wife. They had separated. So maybe, well, I've lost my train of thought.
Here's what I think. Well, I don't think. I think that we can back this up with Scripture. And I don't agree with what I think. Okay, so this will really confuse you. The technical side of it is that, yes, they were still married in God's eyes, right? They were married. They separated. They only have one choice, is to reconcile and get back together, because until they die, God sees them as married. And this trips up a lot of Christians because they say, well, they were married, and so then one of them, I'm just going to wait around, and maybe they'll mess up first, and then I'll have the right to be married. So it's just like a blinking game, right? So they're just going to wait. If you go into a separation hoping the other one will mess up, you've already sinned. Why? Do what? You're putting a stumbling block in front of them. 1 Corinthians 7, the first part of 1 Corinthians 7 talks about the purpose of Paul's talking about sexual purity, right? And maintaining sexual purity. And he says, if you can stay single and be like I am and work for the Lord, that's great. But if you can't, then it's better to marry than burn with passion. You need to go and be married. Once you've married someone and then you separate, you're setting them up for failure, right? So you, in effect, you have put a stumbling block before your spouse with the intention of hoping that they're going to do it. So does that really give you the right then to go and get married? Well, technically it does, but I wouldn't want to stand before God in judgment and explain to him why I tripped up my spouse on purpose, knowing that they had these inclinations or thinking they might fail. And so you'd have a hard time explaining that to the Lord in judgment. On the technical side of it, the rule says if one of them commits adultery, well, then the other one is free to marry, right? They're released from that. But what we've studied previously is you have this triangular relationship where God joined two people together for the purpose of a holy matrimony, a holy relationship in Him, where blessings would be, where your prayers aren't hindered, where you have a relationship that's grounded in truth and in love and respect and mutual respect. And when you intentionally dissolve that on your own, well, then you're try to dissolve it. You can't because God's joined you. But when you do that, you're putting a stumbling block before them. And so you have a technical yes and a definite no. Go ahead. I don't know. That was a really complicated example. I'd have to write that all down. I generally know what you're saying, but we would have to sit down and talk about all that. But maybe we'll answer part of what you're saying in these questions. Okay. So that. All right. Go ahead. Right, and that's where I'm telling you, the technical rule is that when one of them commits adultery, it frees the other one up, just like death. If you separate it, and one of the questions is about death too, if you are separated because you can't get along, all right, or let's say that, for instance, in the example that he gives there in 1 Corinthians, they separate for some reason, you can't remain married because one's a Christian, one's not, and you don't get along, so you separate. God still sees you, and that's what we established last week. God still sees you as married. You don't have any way of unjoining yourself from the other person. So you're sitting there. He lives on the left side of the street, and you live on the right side of the street, and you look at each other all day, but you're not married in the government's eyes. But in God's eyes, you're still married, and you're still one, and you still have a relationship. You may have even had kids together and everything else. But then he dies across the street. Are you free from that marriage? Yes, you're free from that marriage. You actually have the right to go get married. But why did you? Now, this comes back to our heart and our intent and why we do things. And this comes down to making a personal. Right. But it comes down, and that would get in the way of my own personal excuse and say, well, I'm going to go get remarried now. You know, she finally died, but we never liked each other, we never got along, and we never did the hard work to build our marriage or to get through the hard times or whatever the situation was. Or maybe it was an abusive situation. A lot of people get out of a marriage because of an abusive situation, because they're being beat to a pulp, and then they know they don't have a right to remarry just because of that. God still sees them as joined. Years later, the spouse that was abusing them dies, and they're like, well, now I can remarry. That's their conscience. That's for them to decide. And you can't make that choice or decision for them. That's between them and God and their in judgment. But on the technical side of it, there is an allowance for that. So as far as death and as far as adultery, those are the only two things that separate a marriage, is death and adultery, and so that God separates a marriage for. But can you imagine trying to explain to the Lord, if your intent was, I don't like him anymore, I didn't like him, I don't love him, I only did this for whatever other reason, and then you come back and use that as a crutch to explain away why it's okay to go and be happy again. You see what I'm saying? And I think that that's a tough place to be. You had some? Oh, you're not allowed to play with your hair. If your hand moves. All right. All right, let's look at this next one. It says, if I and my spouse are both wanting out, similar kind of situation, we are separate, but not for sexual immorality of either party, we just can't get along. We separate, then the other one dies, am I free to remarry? So we kind of answered that in the question. Technically, yes. But it's the same problem. What is the intent of your heart? What was the relationship about? Why were you doing it? Why are you put in this position in the first place? The simplest thing, not always simple in a marriage relationship, especially one that's caustic in its environment, but the simplest thing is to stay married and to do what you're supposed to do from the beginning all the way through and work hard to keep that relationship put together. All right. This is the third one, I realize I'm living in adultery with my partner that was put away for sexual immorality before. So in other words, the partner that I'm now married to was already married before, and got divorced, was divorced from, was put away for sexual immorality. They were put away as an adulterer, right? You understand what I'm saying there? I now am married to them, I'm living with them in adultery. Okay, so I've gotten a government marriage to a person who committed adultery with somebody else who was put away for adultery. I realize now, because I've studied the scriptures, that by marrying that person, I became an adulterer with them, right? I'm now partaking in that sin. Is that clear? So I put them away to be free from the sin, because the only way I can be out of the sin of adultery is to put them away and separate myself from them, right? I can't continue in it. I can't just say, well, Lord, forgive me of this bad decision. I'm sorry I've committed adultery, and he'll forgive you, and you can stay in it. So he gets out of that, or this person does. Do I now have the right to remarry another person as long as that person is free to remarry? All right, so within the parameters of the marriage that we saw before, or what God requires of somebody who's has a right to be married, somebody who either is old enough, hasn't been married before, or their spouse died or committed adultery on them, so they're free to marry. Am I free to go marry another person? I've been in a marriage where I committed adultery by marrying somebody who didn't have the right to be married. Can I leave that marriage, be free from that sin, and then am I free to go remarry again? Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the situation we have. We have a person who has married her who's been divorced, right, who's been put away for sexual immorality. They've committed adultery. But then they realize they've committed adultery by marrying her, so they get out of that marriage. They put her away. They get away from it. They're single again. Are they still an adulterer, or are they out of that marriage? Do they have the right to remarry because they got out of that marriage? All right, let me ask you this. Let's put it this way. What if I have two lesbians that are married? Do they have the right to be married? There's two women. They have a certificate from the government that says, we're married. One of them becomes a Christian and says, I can't be married to that person, so they dissolve their marriage. They go and get a legal divorce, right? Then she becomes a Christian. She's a Christian for 10 years and then realizes she's done away with that lifestyle. And 10 years later, she says, well, I'm going to get married to this guy who's a Christian who I can marry. Is she allowed to marry him? Okay, because why? Right. She was never joined in God's eyes. That's why we spent the time last week trying to understand that. There's only one way to be married, and that's by joining, and that joining comes only from God. So if you're not joined, then you can't be married. You become an adulterer. The sin of adultery is having sexual intercourse with someone who is married. Okay, that's what it's defined by. So in the case of Matthew 19:9, you have a person who is sinning with someone else who God still sees them as married to someone, or who has brought sin into a relationship, who's put away for it, and now they've been joined to that person. They've joined themselves to that person, and they're in sin. So when they take themselves out of that sin, they can get forgiveness of that sin. And the sin is the act of having that intercourse with somebody that is not free to marry, that's in adultery. So technically, you have the right to go and remarry after you get out of that relationship. Does that give the right of the person who you married the first time that didn't have the right to be married to go remarry now? No. For life, they're, I guess you would say, damaged goods, right? So they messed up their first marriage. They were put away for sexual immorality. They were put away for adultery. They're an adulterer marked for the rest of their life. Does that mean that they can't go to heaven? No, they can change their ways. They can repent. They can be faithful to God the rest of their life. They can be a good Christian. They can be a good influence on other people. They just don't have the right to be married the rest of their life because of the situation that they put themselves into. But technically, the one that marries them can get out of that marriage because it wasn't a marriage sanctioned by God. They just attached themselves to an adulterer and got into their sin and partook of it, and then they get out of their sin. They're not in that sin anymore, so they're free to marry again. Is it a good idea? Probably not. There's so many variables to that situation, and again, the intent and why you're doing it and whatever. But there's a lot of people that we'll come across in the world that are not Christians, that have been married 3 or 4 times, and if you don't go through this process from the beginning, and you convince them to become a Christian, and they go and are baptized for the remission of their sins, and then you say, well, it's okay, you just stay in the marriage that you're in, and just say, well, I don't know anything about the past, don't tell me about it. Well, are you doing them any favors? No, because that sin, what did we establish last week? What is marriage, the relationship of marriage? It transcends all of the New Testament, the Old Testament, the patriarchal law. It's from the beginning. What did Matthew 19:1 say? He said, or not verse 1, verse 4 or 5, he says, that have you not heard that from the beginning he made them male and female? Jesus went and said, all of this marriage law stuff transcends what you think in the Mosaic law, and it transcends the New Testament law. It goes back to the beginning. And so the principles of marriage, divorce and remarriage, all have to go back to the beginning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not joined. If, and we kind of discussed this last week, but if they both have the right to be married, okay, and so one of the things we established was, you know, a 4-year-old doesn't have the right to be married because they're not capable of being married, right? So you can't go and have a 40-year-old marry a 4-year-old. That wouldn't work. God wouldn't join them together, just on principle. Then if you have someone who's been married before and was put away for adultery, they don't have the right to be married, like I just mentioned. So just because they're a man and a woman doesn't mean God's going to join them, because they're joined to someone else, or they're, as I said a minute ago, damaged goods, and they're not allowed to. So yes, God will join whether they're Christians or not. When you go out here in the world, every day people are getting married that aren't Christians. God's joining them too. When they make, as Harry has mentioned several times, an oath to one another, and they make that promise, a man to a woman, and they stand before people and there's witnesses, and they say, this is what we're doing, then God joins that husband and wife together. just like he joined Adam and Eve together, just like Abraham joined himself to Sarah in their dispensation of time. It doesn't matter when we're talking about. So yeah, any man and woman can be joined as long as they are qualified to be married. Yeah, does that answer your question? Okay. I'm missing something. Say. Okay. It doesn't matter what your perception or your spiritual belief is, or if you're an atheist. If you're a man and a woman, and you make a commitment to one another, and you go before your atheist priest, I don't know, but whatever, and you don't even believe in God. A justice of the peace. You go before somebody in the government, you say, marry us. And you have the right to be married the first time, God's going to join you together, okay? Because you just made a commitment. What he won't join is two lesbians or two gay guys or whatever, because they can't be married in his, right? That won't happen. So it doesn't matter whether, and how do we know that? Because when we study in, like in Corinthians, but when we study in Corinthians, he said, and such were some of you, right? He also talked, talking about people that were, that had all these sins in their life, and including gays and lesbians, that kind of stuff. You have all these people that had sinned previously, but God still recognized their proper marriages. You had people that that were required, like in Matthew 19, he sits there, Jesus says, you have this obligation and this one opportunity. I hate to say it that way. One reason to get out of the marriage, right? So, and then if you go further into 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39, death is the other reason. So you have, you have adultery and you have death. Adultery and death are the only two reasons for separation as far as unjoining, God unjoining. That doesn't matter if they're Christian or not. It doesn't matter whether they came into that marriage. In 1 Corinthians 7, you have people that some of them were Christians, some of them were not Christians, and let's turn over there real quick. 1 Corinthians 7. And he deals with two or three different issues in this chapter. And in fact, let's jump all the way to 17 to just kind of talk about the principle without talking directly about marriage. In verse 17, he says, but this 1 Corinthians 7:17, but as God has distributed to each one, the Lord has called each one, so let him walk, and so let us ordain in all the churches. Was anyone called while circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised, which is technically impossible, right? Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. So he says, if you became a Christian and you were uncircumcised, you're a Greek, you're uncircumcised, it's not required of you to go become circumcised to become a Christian, right? He says, live as you are called. Okay, so however you are, that's how you can come. He says in verse 20, let each one remain in the same calling which you were called. Were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can be made free, rather use it. So if you're a slave in someone's house and you become a Christian, don't worry yourself and say, well, I'm a slave, and what can I do as a Christian? He says, you just be a Christian the best way you can. Now, if you have the opportunity to become free, take your freedom. He says, if you're free, another verse later, don't go become a slave, right? Now, go back to, And this is all in the same discussion about where we're at. In chapter 7, in verse 2, "Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let her husband render the wife the affection due to her, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband, and likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except for consent, for a time which you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But I say this as a concession, not as a commandment, for I wish that all men were even as I am myself, but each one have his own gift from God, one in one manner and the other in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them to remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from the husband, but even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and the husband is not to divorce his wife. But to the rest I, not the Lord, say that a brother has a wife who's..." Now this is where we get into that context that we just read. But to the rest I, not the Lord, say..." Now this is Paul saying, the Lord didn't say this is a commandment, but I'm suggesting that this is a good way to do it, okay? "That if any brother has a wife who does not believe, and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her." So what did he just say? She doesn't believe. He's become a Christian, right? He's a brother in Christ. I'm talking to you as a brother in Christ. Your wife is not a believer. Don't put her away. Why? Why does he? What's the reason he gives for not putting her away? He says, "For if the unbelieving husband is..." "And the woman who has a husband who does not believe, for if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him." 14. "For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise your children would be unclean, but now they are holy." Marriage is connected between two people, whether they're Christians or not. Okay, these people, this husband and wife, neither one were Christians when they got married, and they had children. When he talks about them being unclean versus holy, it's they came about, all right, they were produced by parents who were married in God's sight, that were transcend. They weren't born out of wedlock, right? So they were clean in a clean and holy relationship. Holy, we don't think of non-Christians as holy, but God is holy, and God sanctified the marriage, which made it holy, right? That's why even the world calls it holy matrimony. And so you have a holy relationship where children were born inside the proper parameters of that relationship. He says, if that's not the case, then that means that your children are unclean. They might as well have been born out of wedlock. If you're saying you can dissolve a marriage because you became a Christian and your spouse didn't, then that destroys the family unit and the relationship there, and makes it as if the kids were born in an unholy situation. He said the husband is sanctified by the wife and the wife by the husband. So the husband is, if he becomes a Christian, or if he doesn't, that relationship is sanctified. It's set apart, right? We studied that earlier in a couple lessons ago, that sanctification is set apart for a purpose. That husband and wife were set apart by God as a purpose to create a family unit. And so he said, they're sanctifying each other. He said, so why would you dissolve your marriage because you became a Christian? If you're content and can continue with that person, or they will continue with you as a non-Christian, then don't dissolve your marriage, because it's what God created. It's what God joined. It's what was intended from the beginning. Now, we know from 1 Peter 3, if you run over there, in 1 Peter chapter y'all have to help me out. I just went blank. Where does it say that that a husband or a wife can have influence on her husband for good? Just went blank. Thank you. You know what? I went to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. I was like, that's not it. It is in 1 Peter 3 verse. Thank you, Lynn. All right, go to verse 1. Wives, likewise be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. So it says to the wives, and this could be said to the husbands also, and in context with what we just looked at in 1 Corinthians 7, why would you divorce your spouse who is sanctified by you in that relationship, right? And so if you stay in that relationship, you have a much better chance of bringing them to Christ also. And so in every way, it's a good idea to stay in that relationship and to be the best example you can. Now he says, I understand. He kind of gives an allowance there for a reason why they might not stay in that marriage. Okay, he says in verse 2, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Fear for what? Respect for God. Okay? But then skip on down to verse 6. He said, whose daughters you are, Sarah obeyed Abraham calling him the Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. So we stay with our husband. In this case, the woman stays with the husband to try and bring him to Christ. She continues to submit. It says, and you do that because you're the daughters of Sarah who obeyed Abraham, and they had this relationship that was a godly relationship you can look to, and he said, for a good example. But he said, if it gets to the point where, and you kind of read between the lines, what he says is, if they do are not afraid with any terror, if they're not fearing for their life, stay in the relationship. Why in the world would you get out of it if you can have a meaningful, palatable relationship with the other person? One of you is a Christian, one's not. You're not getting beat to a pulp, okay? So you're not worried about, you don't fear for your life. You're not being terrorized in your marriage. He says, then you stay together and you see it through, because you'll have a better chance of having influence on your spouse. And that would go for husbands or for wives. So that brings us to our next question there. Actually, skip down to the last one on the page. It says, I became a Christian and my spouse didn't, so am I free to divorce my spouse and remarry? What's the answer to that? No. No, no, no. All right, so let's clarify that. So if I'm married, I become a Christian, my spouse says, if you're going to become a Christian, we're getting a divorce, I don't want anything to do with you, then what? Am I free to remarry? Okay. What does the scripture say about that situation? Okay, okay, y'all turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and go to verse 15, and this is where I was headed with my question. So, Neil mentioned it again. So you have a Christian, you have two people who are not Christians. One becomes a Christian, one doesn't. One of them says, I'm done with the marriage, I don't like this Christianity thing, and so I'm getting a divorce. They go down and they file for a divorce at the government. Government gives it to them. Now you're divorced, but you're a Christian. Does God see that marriage as dissolved? No, that marriage is still together. That person then goes and says, I don't want anything to do with it because of Christianity. And this comes back to that technical thing we talked about earlier. The marriage is dissolved not just because you can't get along, but because you became a Christian, which is the reason you don't get along anymore, right? They go and they say, I want out of this marriage. They walk away from it. You didn't want to walk away from it. You're trying to do what Paul suggested and stay with him and what Peter suggested. But they walk away from the marriage and they go join themselves to someone else. They just became an adulterer. You have the right to go into and in God's eyes, be unjoined and remarry someone else because they did that to you, with your intent the whole time was to stay with them. But he says, and so in such cases, you're not under bondage. But that's not what this verse here is talking about in verse 15. It says, but if an unbeliever departs, remember the context of verses before, they don't get along, one of them goes away, the other one, maybe y'all stay single the rest of your life, both of you, okay? He says, if an unbeliever departs, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. That's not talking about you're automatically free to go remarry somebody just because your spouse left. It says you're not under the bondage of the authority of that relationship. So if a husband leaves, he says, well, I don't want to be a Christian, and you want to be a Christian. The wife is a Christian. Does she have to be under his direct authority every day and what's going on in their lives and where they live and where they go and all that kind of stuff? And no, the authority of that husband has been diminished by his own actions, and so he's not under that bondage. You could take that to the next level if that person then goes. That person who's not the Christian, who departs because of their unbelief, they depart and they go join themselves someone else. Well, they just became an adulterer. So in that way, you're also not under bondage, and you would be free to remarry. But if you go into it, let's say that you become a Christian, you're like, well, I want to marry a Christian really bad, so I'm not going to take the gospel to my spouse. I'm not going to live the right example before them, and maybe they'll go away, and so then they'll go commit adultery, and then I can remarry. If you go into that thinking that's the end result, then you've set them up for a stumbling block, and you've caused them to sin and to add to their sin and not be able to come to the Lord. And so you're not being the example you need to be. So you're going to be just as guilty of their adultery as they are in that regard. See? That's right. That's right. Yep. Yeah, when we could go, there's two or three scriptures on stumbling blocks. If y'all want to read those later, write down 1 Corinthians 8:9, Matthew 18:6, and Romans 13:12-13. Those are all good scriptures to study out about stumbling blocks and the consequences of it. And actually, in a way, becoming guilty of the sin that you caused them to commit. And none of those talk specifically about marriage or adultery or anything else. They talk about other things, and they're a little bit broad. But the principle of putting a stumbling block before somebody, Christ in one of those verses said it'd be better for you to hang a millstone around your neck and be thrown to the bottom of the sea than to cause one of these to lose their salvation because of things you do. Yes, sir. Is what? Yeah. All right. In summary, the one thing that everybody, or two things everybody needs to take away from this, is there is only two things that dissolve a marriage that you can absolutely rest everything on. And one is someone commits adultery, and the other one is death, right? That's the only two things. And so there, we could go on and describe all kinds of hypotheticals and really twist it up. And we've all known relationships that have had all kinds of problems. When you get in a discussion with anybody about these issues, just go to Matthew 19, go to 1 Corinthians 7, plug it in. Sometimes if it gets really convoluted, like the one you started talking about earlier, write all those details down, answer each piece of it. Yes or no, and if you ever hit a no, you stop right there. And then if you hit a yes, well, then move on to the next thought and kind of dissect it, because it's really important. We don't want to assume that everybody's okay because they feel like they're okay, because that's a straight ticket to hell, and we don't want them to be there, right? All right, we will study out Wednesday night. Doug is going to be out of town, so we're going to start lesson 8 on Wednesday night. And if y'all can study it, we will probably do it in two lessons for Wednesday and Sunday. I'm not sure how it'll break out. Thank you.